Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Denny Johnson. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is January 25th, 2015, and I'm talking with Denny Johnson. Denny, could you please state your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please?
My name is Denny Johnson. Hometown is Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I was born October 11th, 1943.
What part of town did you grow up in?
I lived in all parts of Minneapolis, but basically North Minneapolis is where I did most of my growing up.
Where did you go to high school, and when did you graduate?
Went to Patrick Henry High School, class of 1962.
And when did you first take an interest in music?
Actually, I used to go roller skating a lot when I lived out in Crystal. And that would be, we moved out there in the early 50s. So in the middle 50s, probably 55, 56, I used to go roller skating at the Crystal Coliseum. I noticed that there was a ad for bands playing. I thought, wow, I'm going to go see some of those bands. So it was either on Saturday afternoons or Sunday afternoons. I went down, and my first band, I think, was Augie Garcia. And he did a double show with Roscoe and his Little Green Men. It was on the weekends, and it was just great.
Can you describe the Crystal Coliseum? What did it look like?
Actually, it was like a big culvert cut in half, laying on its side. It was a rounded top Quonset hut is what they used to call those things. The big metal buildings that had the curved round top. They were kind of cheap and easy to build back then. When you walked in the front door, you had the check-in area. Then around the corner, you had the snack bar. And upstairs of that, you had a little area where you could sit up there at tables and stuff. But it was a good-sized roller rink. And I remember they used to set the stage up in a couple of different areas. Sometimes in the back, the full length of the building, and sometimes right at the side of the snack bar.
What do you recall about Augie Garcia?
Hairy legs, a lot of fun, laughing and running all over the stage. He was kind of goofy.
He wore shorts, right?
Yes, he did. That's why I said hairy legs.
How about Roscoe?
Roscoe and those Little Green Men, they used to color their hair green, and they had their own little steps and spoof. It was a great band, great to see.
You told me that seeing Elvis Presley on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1956 had a big impression on you.
Elvis, he just really kicked me in the side of the head. He was like no other. There wasn't another performer out there that did what he did or looked like he did or even sounded like he did.
And how did that impact you?
Oh, I wanted to be him. I wanted to be Elvis.
So what did you do?
What did I do? Well, my sisters used to have this little singing trio, which it was my sister Shirley Barb and Pat Hall. And they used to sing little songs and stuff like that, but they wanted to perform in front of people. So they said, let's have a little garage show out there where we set up things in the garage and we'll sing. And we need more than just ourselves to be on the bill. So Denny, you do Elvis songs. So I made this little guitar out of cardboard and a board and drew frets on it and stuff like that. And Elvis had this guitar back then. It was kind of like leather inscribed with Elvis Presley on it. And I kind of did the same thing and tried to look like him, had all of his moves down and all that stuff, you know. It was funny, but I got up in front of the kids and did all that. And that was my first spiel to music right there, is copying somebody lip-singing to Elvis records in the garage for talent shows or whatever kind of shows you want to call them back then.
Was it obvious to you that Elvis Presley was new and different compared to other singers at that time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, music at that time came out of the 40s and the Frank Sinatras and the Rosemary Clooneys and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, here you got this rebellious, you know, not really rebellious, but all of a sudden he was doing things that parents didn't approve. He had the greasy hair, the ducktail, the collar up, the wiggling hips, and the, you know... Guy had a great voice.
Were there any other musicians you liked in those early days?
Oh, the early 50s had a lot of great bands. I remember I really liked Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps. Gene Vincent thing. And the Everly Brothers, they just blew me away with their harmonies, you know. Bye Bye Love and all the other stuff that they did. Just great. Who else did I like back then? Ricky Nelson. Every week on the Ozzie and Harriet show, we used to watch them, and he used to sing a song and have his little eyes half open and little blinky things. But I liked Ricky Nelson a lot, too, back then.
Where did you buy your records back then?
My first records I bought were at a record store in the Crystal Shopping Center.
Do you recall the very first records that you bought?
I think the first record I bought was an Elvis Presley EP. It had four songs on it. It was the one where he's wearing a purple and white striped shirt, looking up a side shot of him. It was an EP, which means it played at 33 and a third, and it had four songs on it, not to be confused with a 45, which played at 45 RPMs and only had two songs on it. Had a little picture sleeve and all that.
Do you remember the first 45 you bought?
First 45 I bought was probably Bye Bye Love by the Everly Brothers. I remember being at a company picnic for my dad's work, and we were at Chubb's Resort on Eagle Lake. And that record came on, and I went, I gotta have that record. And I think back then they were only like 37 cents or 49 cents or something like that at the record store. It was pretty cheap back in the 50s.
What were some of your favorite songs in those early days?
In the early days, Elvis Presley, Heartbreak Hotel, Don't Be Cruel, Hound Dog, A Ring Around My Neck, all that kind of stuff. Everything Elvis did was just great. The Everly Brothers, I remember they had the Hey Bird Dog, they had Bye Bye Love, they had Dream, they had I Wonder If I Care As Much, which is a song that was covered by my sisters covered that song at some talent show in Robbinsdale. Marty Robbins, White Sport Coat, Pink Carnation, I remember I liked that one. Johnny Cash, I Walked the Line. God, when that thing came on the record, and a lot of people don't remember that he did that before he started each line. I don't know if he was finding his note or whatever, but I mentioned that to a few people. They go, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, Ricky Nelson, My Bucket's Got a Hole in It, and all that kind of stuff that Ricky did was just great. Gene Vincent, like I said earlier, Bebopalula, you know, the Silhouettes by the Rays. I mean, I remember really liking that. It was covered later on by the Herman's Hermits in the 60s, but Silhouettes was a super tune back then. You know, stuff was so simple and so sweet back then.
What radio station did you listen to?
WTGY is what I listened to back then. And most of the stuff, you know, they played the right kind of stuff that I was looking for back then. It was all the top 40 things, and you could listen every hour and hear the same 15 songs.
Did you ever go to the Robbinsdale Youth Center?
Oh, I went to the Robbinsdale Youth Center all the time. That's where I used to dance. My sisters, a long time ago, you know, back when I was probably about 9 or 10, they'd be dancing around the house. They'd go, come on, Danny, get up here. You got to dance with us. So I learned all the steps and all the dancing. And I used to go to Robbinsdale Youth Center and dance with all the girls and stuff like that. And they used to have talent shows there too, but I never had enough guts to get up on that stage. My sisters did, but I didn't.
Did they have bands there or?
No, it was just all music. They played 45 records all the time. They had their own little like DJ that used to play stuff. And it was upstairs at the Robbinsdale Police Department, Police and Fire Department on the second or third floor, I believe. Third floor.
Did bands ever play at your school?
No, at the school, I Regent Junior High or Robbinsdale Junior High and Robbinsdale Senior High, I don't remember bands ever playing there. I mean, they could have, but I don't remember. I just remember the sock hops, and they called them sock hops because when you went there, you couldn't dance with your shoes on the gym floor. You had to take them off and put them in a pile, and then at the end of the night, it was really, you always got those clowns that got to mix up everybody's shoes, so you could sit there for like an hour trying to find your other shoe. It was funny.
And I understand you actually won an award of some sort.
Oh, back then, dancing at the high school, I got put on the cover of the Junior Jotter, which was the school paper for best dancers. It was me and Pat Hall were doing that back then.
So you moved to North Minneapolis in what grade?
Probably been 11th grade.
And is this the first time you meet some band members?
Yes, I met Tom Forstick, and because he was into bikes and cars and stuff like that, and he introduced me to Donnie Larson, which was a friend of his that lived a few blocks away. And we used to go over to Donnie's, and that was right when the Underbeats started getting together. It was Russ Hagen on guitar and vocals, and it was Jim Johnson on guitar and vocals. Not much vocals he did at that point. Russ was doing most of the stuff. And then Donnie Larson on bass and Bob Duke Duane on drums. And he used to practice in Donnie's basement all the time.
Where did Donnie live?
Donnie lived on 54th and Logan it's on the border of Brooklyn Center in North Minneapolis. I think it's probably called Brooklyn Center then, though.
Did the band have a name?
Actually, at that point, they did not have the name. The Underbeats name didn't come up for a little while. But we used to have sleepovers at Donnie's house. The band used to practice, and we used to have all these sleepovers. And
what kind of songs was the band practicing at that time?
The band practiced and played a lot of Chuck Berry songs like Little Queenie, Sweet Little 16, Bye Bye Johnny, Broken Arrow, Johnny Be Good, and a few like bluesy things, you know, Shake It For Me and stuff like that.
So when did they finally come up with the name The Underbeats?
1963 is when the band started playing under the name The Underbeats. And I remember Russ booked the band's first job.
Where was it?
That was in Chisago City. It was their community center. Russ was in the service. He had left the band, and Rayburg took his spot. And then he came back on leave, and somebody had called him, because I think there was a cancellation at the place where they were playing, the community center in Chisago City. And they asked him if he could play. So what he did was, he didn't have the equipment anymore. He borrowed Rayburg's guitar and Rayburg's amp, and the whole band went off to play this job at Chisago Lakes Community Center. And the job went off great. It went great.
So what do you recall about the Underbeats playing their very first live job?
I thought it went really, really well back then. But, you know, at that age and that time, it's pretty easy to be amused. And
so what do you recall about the very first Underbeats live job?
The very first Underbeats live job, we had so many friends that hung around with the Underbeats, Donnie and Jim and Ray and Dwayne back then, or Bob Dwayne. We used to have these little caravans. Every time the band would play, there'd be like 9 or 10 cars going down the road to these jobs. It was a lot of fun.
Did you actually help carry their equipment?
Yes. We always tried to get into the jobs by not paying. I mean, it was only like 50 cents or a dollar back then, but we'd go, I'm with the band. I'm carrying the amp. And after a while, these places would just let only like 2 or 3 people in, and the rest had to pay.
So technically you were a roadie.
I started out as a roadie for the Underbeats, yes.
So is this the only job that Russ and Dwayne played?
Yes. I think after that, Russ went back to the service because he had to go back off of, you know, he was home on leave. And then Bob Dwayne, or Duke, as he was known, he had joined, I think, the Navy. And he was off and gone, and then he was replaced by Rod Eaton. And that's when the Underbeats really started to flow back then. They really started to take off with Foot Stomping and all the other things.
So was there a time lag there between that first job in Chisago City and their next job?
A little bit there was, but they practiced for a while, and then they did get an offer to play Bill's Roller Rink in Anoka. And then Jim says, well, you know, Jim is Mr. Practice has got to be perfect, but he said, no, we're not going to play the job. And then the other members of the band says, if we don't play the job, we're done, we quit. So they played the job and everything went fine. They took jobs after that. But Jim is always Mr. Practice. Everything's got to be perfect. And that's just Jim Johnson.
Did the band sound different with Ray Berg and Rod Eaton in there?
Yes, a lot different. Any band, no matter, I would say any band, if you change one member, it's going to sound different. It is, because nobody has the same feel and the same playing ability as the person before them. You know, you can get somebody kind of close, but that's never the same. You just have to adjust to the changes and go on.
What did you think of the Beach Boys?
Bought their album all summer long with Little Deuce Coupe on it. It was their hit single. I loved it.
When did you buy your very first musical instrument?
I actually don't know where I got my Harmony flat top guitar, but I started that in July of 64. I had this acoustic guitar, 6-string. And I was learning chords and stuff like that. And after watching Jim Johnson play all of his leads and stuff like that, I realized it was going to take me probably 2 lifetimes to catch up to anything he was doing. So I thought, you know what? I think 4 fat strings would be a lot easier to learn than 6 little ones. So I switched over to bass and bought my first bass in December of 64 at a music store on the corner of Cedar and Lake Street, East Lake Street, or Lake Street, yeah. East Lake Street.
And what kind of a bass guitar was that?
It was a Harmony bass guitar. I had that for a little while, up until I seen Chris Hillman from the Byrds playing a job at the prom center when the Byrds played there, and he had this guild, and it sounded so good. And I went back to B-sharp music. I remember I talked to Jim Lopez and says, can you get me a guild bass? He says, I can get you anything you want if you're going to pay for it. I says, okay, I want the guild bass. And we looked up the model, and it was the same one that Chris Hillman had, and I ordered it and waited, like, I think probably about 2.5 months for it. It came in and bought that from B-sharp.
What did you use for a amp?
I purchased a Fender Bassman from Jim Lopez back when I got my Harmony guitar. Where I realize we're jumping backwards right now, but back when I got my Harmony guitar, I'd purchased a Bassman from Jim Lopez, and that was really a treat dealing with him. You walk in there and you say, how much is it? And he goes, no, how much are you going to give me for it? And I go, no, how much do you want for it? He goes, I said, how much are you going to give me for it? Meaning your price, if it was too low, he'd say not enough, and if it was over what he wanted, then he was happy. That was Jim.
Did you take lessons on the bass guitar?
I took lessons at B-sharp Music for a little while, but when I ended up joining Jokers, which wasn't Jokers at the time, but when I joined the band with Dave Wagner, he said, stop taking lessons, we'll get you through everything, and they did. You know, between Gene Balaban and Kink, and we got through everything we needed to get through. It was great.
Did you watch the Beatles on The Ed Sullivan Show in February 1964?
Yes, the Beatles took music to a whole new level. They flipped the whole thing. They really did. I mean, they had all these chords and harmonies and stuff that nobody else was doing. Everybody back then was doing like 3-chord songs, you know, and all of a sudden they came out with a whole new ball game. It was just great. I can see why they overtook America.
What early Beatles songs did you like?
Oh, I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, all of them. You know, I remember buying all their albums and having everything they ever did.
So when did you first put a band together?
I put a band together in April of 65.
So who was in your first band?
My first band was Doug Jurdy on piano, John Klein on guitar, Cliff Heinsch on guitar, and myself on bass guitar. We practiced at Doug's house because that's where the piano was. And we had everybody playing out of my amp because I was the only one that had an amp. So my little Fender Bassman had 2 guitars and 1 bass ran through it. And it sounded great because back then you didn't have the volumes, you know, that people are playing at now. And well, actually now it's going back to quiet, but there was that stage where everything was so loud.
What kind of music did this band play?
We did just certain things that were on the radio, easy songs to play back then. We did a lot of 3-chord stuff.
Did you also practice at John's house too?
Oh yes, we practice at John Klein's house every now and then. And what's really funny is across the street from John Klein's house lived Dave Middlemist, who I didn't know him at the time, but all of a sudden we took a break playing music at John's house, and all of a sudden Kink, or Dave Middlemist, was across the street, and he had a twin reverb and a guitar, and he wanted us to know that he was there. So he turned his guitar up really loud so we would hear him, and all of a sudden I went, hey, somebody else is playing across the street. So I walked across the street and I met the guy. And I said, why don't you come on over and play with us? So he came over and jammed with us a little bit. So that's the first time I met Dave Middlemist, or Kink from Crow is where his fame is.
So how long did your first band last with Doug, John, and Cliff?
It only lasted a couple of months with time we can get together. Everybody else at that time was getting jobs. And, you know, I wanted something more solid. So I was looking for something different. And I went for probably about 2 or 3 months just trying out with different people and stuff like that up until I'd gotten my call from Dave Wagner in October of 65.
So you get a call from Dave Wagner, and what does he have to say?
Dave Wagner from the Aardvarks and the He2s had called me and said he was going to start a brand new band. And his band was ending. So we were planning on getting together in November. He called me in October.
This is 65 now?
This is, yeah. October of 65 is when I got the phone call from him, because he used to live by me in Mississippi Courts. And I used to go out to hear the Aardvarks now and then out at Gene Balaban's house, practice in his mother's living room. And he wanted to start a new band. He wanted it totally different than what he was into. And Dave was a good leader, a great leader, I think.
Okay, so now who's in this new band that starts to practice?
The new band that starts to practice is Dave Wagner on lead vocals and Farfisa organ. Then there was Gene Balaban on lead guitar, and he also did lead vocals, and myself on bass guitar and background vocals. And we needed a drummer. So we ended up going to the Ritz Theater, which is over in Northeast Minneapolis, where Dave Anthony, the promoter, the booker, used to have tryouts and bands to play on stage all the time. And he wanted bands to have that feel of playing in front of an audience and on stage. So he got the Ritz Theater. He used to rent it. And bands every weekend or even all week long used to practice there. So I went over there and I remember we were listening to Del Counts and stuff like that. And we ran into Pete Huber. And he was from a band called the Gremmies that just broke up because Jim Larkin left the band to fill in for Lonnie Knight, who left the Ravons to go to school with his family. They'd moved to Detroit. So their whole band just decided to fold it, and then Pete was looking for a drumming job, so we arranged for Pete to come over and try out as our drummer. And he did come over the next week, and we tried him out, and everything went great. Personalities clicked, we got along, and everything was fine.